Chapter 97. Wrote Bjarne, while gliding along on our way, I cannot well omit some account of a poor devil we had among us, who went by the name of Rope Bjarne, or Ropey. He was a nondescript who had joined the ship as a landsman. Being so excessively timid and awkward, it was thought useless to try and make a sailor of him, so he was translated into the cabin as steward. The man previously filling that post, a good seaman, going among the crew and taking his place. But poor Ropey proved quite as clumsy among the crockery as in the rigging, and one day when the ship was pitching, having stumbled into the cabin with a wooden tureen of soup, he scalded the officers, so that they didn't get over it in a week. Upon which, he was dismissed, and returned to the forecastle. Now, nobody is so heartily despised as a pusillanimous, lazy, good-for-nothing landlubber. A sailor has no bowels of compassion for him. Yet, useless as such a character may be in many respects, a ship's company is by no means disposed to let him reap any benefit from his deficiencies. Regarded in the light of a mechanical power, whenever there is any plain, hard work to be done, he is put to it like a lever. Everyone giving him a pry. Then, again, he is set about all the vilest work. Is there a heavy job a tarring to be done, he is pitched neck and shoulders into a tar barrel, and set to work at it. Moreover, he is made to fetch and carry like a dog. Like as not, if the mate sends him after his quadrant, on the way he is met by the captain, who orders him to pick some oakum. And while he is hunting up a bit of rope, a sailor comes along and wants to know what the deuce he's after, and bids him be off to the forecastle. Obey the last order, is a precept inviolable at sea. So the landlubber, afraid to refuse to do anything, rushes about distracted, and does nothing. In the end receiving a shower of kicks and cuffs from all quarters. Added to his other hardships, he is seldom permitted to open his mouth unless spoken to, and then, he might better keep silent. Alas for him, if he should happen to be anything of a droll, for in an evil hour should he perpetrate a joke, he would never know the last of it. The witticisms of others, however, upon himself, must be received in the greatest good humor. Woe be unto him, if at meal times he, so much as look sideways at the beef kid before the rest are helped. Then he is obliged to plead guilty to every piece of mischief which the real perpetrator refuses to acknowledge, thus taking the place of that sneaking rascal nobody, ashore. In short, there is no end to his tribulations. The landlubber's spirits often sink, and the first result of his being moody and miserable is naturally enough an utter neglect of his toilet. The sailors perhaps ought to make allowances, but heartless as they are, they do not. No sooner is his cleanliness questioned than they rise upon him like a mob of the Middle Ages upon a Jew, drag him into the lee scuppers, and strip him to the buff. In vain he bawls for mercy. In vain calls upon the captain to save him. Alas! I say again, for the landlubber at sea. He is the veriest wretch the watery world over. And such was Pope Tarn, of all landlubbers, the most lubberly and most miserable. A forlorn, stunted, hook-visaged mortal he was too, one of those whom you know at a glance, to have been tried hard and long in the furnace of affliction. His face was an absolute puzzle. Though sharp and sallow, it had neither the wrinkles of age nor the smoothness of youth, so that for the soul of me, I could hardly tell whether he was 25 or 50. But to his history. In his better days, it seems he had been a journeyman baker in London, somewhere about Holborn, and on Sundays, wore a new coat and metal buttons, and spent his afternoons in the tavern, smoking his pipe and drinking his ale like a free and easy journeyman baker that he was. But this did not last long, for an intermeddling old fool was the ruin of him. He was told that London might do very well for elderly gentlemen and invalids, but for a lad of spirit, Australia was the land of promise. In a dark day Ropey wound up his affairs and embarked. Arriving in Sydney with a small capital, and after a while waxing snug and comfortable by dint of hard kneading, he took unto himself a wife, and so far as she was concerned, might then have gone into the country and retired, for she effectually did his business. In short, the lady worked him woe in heart and pocket, and in the end, ran off with his till and his foreman. Ropey went to the sign of the Pipe and Tankard, got fuddled, and over his fifth pot meditated suicide and intention carried out, for the next day he shipped as landsman aboard the Julia, South Seaman. The ex-baker would have fared far better, had it not been for his heart, which was soft and underdone. A kind word made a fool of him, and hence most of the scrapes he got into. Two or three wags, aware of his infirmity, used to draw him out in conversation, whenever the most crabbed and choleric old seamen were present. To give an instance, the watch below, just waked from their sleep, are all at breakfast, and Ropey, in one corner, is disconsolately partaking of its delicacies. Ow, sailors newly waked are no cherubs, and therefore not a word is spoken, everybody munching his biscuit, grim and unshaven. At this juncture an affable-looking scamp, Flashjack, crosses the forecastle, tin can in hand, and seats himself beside the landlubber. Hard fare this, Ropey, he begins, hard enough to, for them that's known better and lived in London. I say now, Ropey, s'posing you were back to Holborn this morning, what would you have for breakfast, eh? Have for breakfast? Cried Ropey in a rapture. Don't speak of it. What ails that fellow? Here growled an old sea bear, turning round savagely. Oh, nothing, nothing, said Jack, and then, leaning over to Ropey's arm, he bade him go on, but speak lower. Well then, said he, in a smuggled tone, his eyes lighting up like two lanterns, well then, I'd go to Mother Mole's, that makes the great muffins. I'd go there, you know, and cock my foot on the yob, and call for a noggin o' something to begin with. What then, Ropey? Why then, Flashy, continued the poor victim, unconsciously warming with his theme. Hi then, I draw my chair up and call for Betty, the gal what tends to customers. Betty, my dear, says I, you looks charming this morning. Give me a nice rasher of bacon and eggs, Betty my love, and I wants a pint of ale, and three nice hot muffins and butter and a slice of Cheshire, and Betty, I wants a shark steak, and be hanged to you, roared Black Dan, with an oath. Whereupon, dragged over the chests, the ill-starred fellow is pummeled on deck. I always made a point of befriending poor Ropey when I could, and, for this reason, was a great favorite of his. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.